Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
97.1 FM Talk.
On demand audio.
Brad Young, who is joining us today. Brad, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Mike, and I'll be sitting in for Mark on Monday and Wednesday of next week.
Oh, very good. So it's good. I'll make sure to clean the studio before we leave. You make sure to do the same thing because I'm here on Tuesday.
Yeah, Clorox wipes, please.
I love that. Brad is our chief legal analyst. He is a partner with Harris Dow Fisher and Young. Brad, there's so much to talk about that's going on right now, but I want to start off with something that I was kind of surprised that he did this, but I don't know why I am surprised about this. So President Trump signed an executive order, and he is directing federal funding cuts to PBS and NPR. I know he's talked about that from time to time, but that is going to be a huge amount of funding that's going to be taken away from them. Can he do that?
Well, actually, he can. And this is something, Mike, that's been being pushed by conservatives for a very long time. For example, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting was set to receive $535 million that would be annually appropriated to them for 2025, then again in 2026. Now, here's the problem. This is something that has been paid for by Congress. And so for the president to step in to say, no, I'm not going to distribute that money, that is potentially a legal pitfall, because if Congress has allocated the money, there's a problem when the executive branch doesn't spend it. We've got previous cases, much different circumstances, where there have been fights between the executive branch and the legislative branch when it comes to whether the executive branch has to spend money. You know, famously, Congress had appropriated money to build part of the wall along the Mexican border, but under the Biden administration and certainly under the Obama administration, that money wasn't spent. So there were problems with how can Congress appropriate money and then the president fail to spend it. That's the same situation that we're going to have here when it creates a battle between these two branches over funding for NPR.
You know, it seems like President Trump really wants to make sure that his attorneys have job security, because it feels like every day he is finding another lawsuit that we can jump into. And I know this has been talked about a lot with PBS and NPR, and they've been talking about that. It's going to be interesting to find out how much Congress pushes back on that funding and where they're going to go from there. But just to make sure that the lawyers do have some work to do, this Harvard thing that he's talking about and taking away the tax exempt status for Harvard, that seems to be even more problematic than the PBS NPR funding.
Well, two things. First of all, here, I got to let you know that my wife's favorite saying is, it's always good when the lawyers get paid. So that's what my wife says, and I want to make sure I get that out there. Secondly, on an issue that's more relative here, when it comes to Harvard, this has actually been done before, Mike. Going all the way back to 1983, the president at the time stripped the funding of all money that would go, and the tax-exempt status, rather, that went to Bob Jones University. Why? Because at Bob Jones University, they prohibited not only interracial marriage, but also interracial dating. And so that was deemed to be so much against public policy that the IRS pulled their 501c3 status. And when they did that, of course, Bob Jones University challenged. It went all the way up to the Supreme Court. It was an 8-1 decision. So it was a remarkably cohesive opinion from the Supreme Court that said, yes, an organization's 501c3 status can be pulled if it exhibits behavior that is not in the quote, public interest, unquote. Fast forward to today. Trump is making the point, I think rightfully so, that in light of the Supreme Court decision last year that you cannot use racial preferences in academics, he's applying that towards using racial preferences in hiring at the university and saying that DEI programs are, at its very core, discriminative in nature. If you give preference to one racial group, then by definition, you are impeding another racial group. I mean, let me give you a different quick example of this. The American Bar Association has said that it wants to, it's not official yet, but said it wants to have professors at law schools to make up the ethnic racial balance of the neighborhood. So when I was in law school, St. Louis University, by my estimate, approximately 30% of my professors were Jewish. The community at large is about 2-4% Jewish.
Oh.
So if you instituted that DEI program, you would have to go and say to the vast majority of Jewish professors, I'm sorry, you are a Jew, so we're going to have to fire you in order to make room for other professors of other ethnic backgrounds. So that is inherently discriminatory. And so if Trump does, in fact, move forward with revoking Harvard's tax-exempt status, it will, of course, be challenged, but there is legal precedent for upholding this type of action.
How much of the anti-Semitism that's been going on Harvard, and that's kind of what we've been talking about for a while now, with Jewish students not feeling safe on campus, how much of that, if any, plays a role in this case?
Oh, I think it plays a direct role, Mike, because it shows a pattern of behavior. I mean, we've seen on college campuses across this country, including right here in St. Louis, where after the October 7 terrorist attack on Israel, essentially it was not only these universities were not only allowing the pro-Palestinian groups to discriminate. In California, you had examples where literally the protesters were forcing Jews to renounce their faith if they wanted to go to class.
Wow.
I mean, that is the most reprehensible conduct that I can even imagine short of physical violence.
Well, and I know
so you had very similar type of activities going on at Harvard. And yes, that plays a role in how the IRS can frame their decision to say, we are revoking Harvard, we're revoking your 501c3 status because of all of these behaviors at your university.
I don't know that Harvard professors were part of this, but to use your example in California, I know California and New York campuses actually had instructors, professors who were part of the protest and
yes,
being big members in that and actually encouraging their students to take advantage of that. Now, I'm going to assume, being communications degree, not law degree, so really going out on a limb here, but the Harvard's endowment is supposed to be over $50 billion. I've heard as much as $52, $53 billion. So
correct.
Harvard talking about how this is going to impact their ability to provide scholarships and things like that. I can't imagine you can really cry poor when you've got $52 billion sitting in an endowment fund somewhere. And I could see the court saying, I think you've got some money to use for scholarships.
That's true. But there's not going to be a test here, a means test. I don't see that the court's saying, well, since you've got $50 billion, we're okay with cutting your 501c3 status. I don't, even though that's the reality of how this works, Mike, I don't think the court would look at that as a factor, because Harvard's argument would be, well, sure, we've got $50 billion sitting in some investments and money markets, but if we lose our 501c3 status, we're not going to get any more money moving forward in the future, because people only give when they get to deduct it from their taxes. So that argument, I don't think would fly legally, but it absolutely is a moral argument and an argument for public consumption.
You know, a lot of times it feels like a lot of these cases the court of public opinion has a lot to do with how this ends up working out. I know it's not supposed to, but especially, I mean, talking about the NPR PBS thing, the court of public opinion is definitely going to weigh in on how Congress reacts to some of this. I don't know so much about the courts with Harvard, but let's talk about the court of public opinion with the Supreme Court weighing in on the Oklahoma case and looking at the Catholic charter schools. There is all kinds of new ground that it feels like the Trump administration is trying to plow in this first 100 days or so of being in office.
Yeah, and here there's a very interesting legal precedent, but let me kind of set the table, as it were, Mike. In this instance, what Oklahoma wants to do is make basically parochial schools available to become charter schools. So the issue then becomes this. If they become a charter school, then indirectly they're being funded by the state government. And if they're being funded by the state government, does that violate the First Amendment prohibition with regard to the establishment of a church or establishment of a religion? That's called the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. So yes, that's a big issue. But here's what I think is interesting, and I'm not really hearing others talk about this point, Mike, and that's this. Several years ago, we had a case that arose from right here in Missouri. It's called Trinity Lutheran, is the case that went up to the Supreme Court. And the issue was Trinity Lutheran wanted some funding from the state of Missouri to make their playgrounds safer for kids to play on. And the state of Missouri said, no, no, no. The bureaucrats said, we can't give you any money because you are a religious affiliated school. So went over to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court said in a, I think it was a 6-3 decision, said, wait, you cannot discriminate against a school because it's a religious school. So in other words, by not giving them funding solely because they're a religious school, you're now discriminating against them because they are a religious school. That type of reasoning is going to factor in specifically here with the charter schools, because that's the only reason they're being excluded from consideration is because they are religious schools.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Well, I know there's a lot of conversation going on about school choice around the country, and especially here in Missouri with this legislative session that our legislature is in right now. How much of school choice is this case going to weigh in on? Because it just feels like there's some crossover in here, but I don't know how much that's really going to play a role.
Well, that's a good question, Mike. And what I've called charter schools for years is school choice light. Okay. In other words, right now, the monopoly is that the government controls most of the schools for our country. And so if you allow a charter school to come in, now you're breaking up that monopoly, as it were. And once you break up that monopoly, that, I think, will open the floodgates for school choice once we bust open this vice grip that public schools have on the education of our children. So, yes, I think that charter school system is going to be instrumental in opening up us as a nation for school choice.
Brad, I think your wife is going to be very happy for a very long time, because it feels like the lawyers are going to get paid for years to come if this first 103 days of legal precedent has anything to do with this. So I think she's going to be a happy lady for your future.
Well, I hope so, too. And let's see how things work out next Valentine's Day on how big the jewelry is that she wants. And
I can see that. So you're going to be in here on Monday for Mark, correct?
I am Monday and Wednesday.
Well, Brad Young, I hope you have a wonderful weekend. I appreciate you always being available to me because, like I like to say, the communication degree does not go far in the court of law. So it's great to have a guy like you being our legal analyst to be able to clear the way for this and make it easy for us to understand, which you always do. I appreciate you, man. I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks, my friend.